Testing. Fuzzy Zeller. Paging Dr. Zeller.
Not a doctor.
Not anymore. Not after what he did to Tiger.
Not with that attitude. Live from the Mundangerous Apartment of Brass in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 84 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about how to play that elementally touched race, the Genasi. But first, in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, the crew of His Enduring Light ties up some loose ends, and the Fisted In punches out in the Character Creation Forge.
So just a reminder, we have Total Party Thrill t-shirts available on TeePublic. There's a link in the show notes. They are $20.
And they're very pretty. And you will be very pretty if you wear one.
Yeah, a few people have bought them and are sending pictures on Twitter of their shirts in the wild, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, they're terribly attractive. The people.
All right. So we also have new Unearthed Arcana, and Wizards of the Coast has announced this is going to be a regular thing now each week.
Yeah, they just keep coming.
Yeah, they're clearly gearing up for a supplement.
And judging from the topics we've gotten recently, is there maybe a DMG 2 in the works?
I really hope this isn't a split thing. Like it's looking like it because they keep adding new rules in addition to the different classes, but man, I wish it would just be players.
Yeah. But how useful is this new one? This is mass combat. I think you might have a few thoughts about this.
I do. I wrote about it on Mundangerous.com. I just don't understand why people want mass combat and why Wizards of the Coast doesn't just tell them a better way to do it.
I understand why people want mass combat.
Because they're big, dumb idiots.
These are bad rules.
Yeah, they're bad.
Yeah.
So basically, you take the CR of the monsters in your group.
Which is already a terrible rubric by which to do anything.
Okay, whatever. But based on the number of them, you end up with a battle rating, which is your attack and your defense. And then you basically roll an attack versus their defense on every time you take an action. The thing is, the only actions you can really take are defend and attack and like some movement stuff.
I love that there's new math to figure out the new arbitrary number that we assign to the difficulty of this new creature.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's also like a commander which gives you your initiative score and then also helps you with morale. But morale isn't something you interact with directly. Morale is just a way of losing, basically. Because if you take a certain amount of casualty, you have to make a morale check.
Yeah, it's just a way for the GM to say, I'm going to end this combat early, and they run away.
Yeah. Or, yeah. the thing is, like, they're different layers that make it interesting, but the underlying combat is not tactical, because all you can do is attack or defend. And it says, you know, based on, you know, the battlefield layout or having allied units, you know, on either side of you or different things, you can give advantage and disadvantage. But that's a binary. So it doesn't matter that you have the higher ground and you're dug in and you have reinforcing units to your left and your right and you have superior firepower. You just get advantage.
Yeah, this system isn't even really necessary because all it's really doing is taking a bunch of creatures that are basically the same, you know, troops essentially, and merging them into one big creature.
Like, yeah.
This is something you can do on the fly in your head.
Yeah,
very easily.
Exactly. And I mean, I always, if I have to do it at this level, I use swarm rules.
Yeah.
I turn monsters into swarms mm-hmm. because it's way easier to wrap your head around and easier to represent on the table.
And those rules already exist.
They do. And in fact, that's what the UA says to do if you've got PCs entering combat alongside these units. It says use the gang up rules from the DMG. So it's like, not even really adding anything to the most exciting part of, you know, the Battle of Five Armies is you wading into the middle of it and like carving a swath of destruction, right? Like,
yeah.
That's cool. That's cinematic. But you don't get that out of these rules. You just get like, how do three armies approach each other and fight and roll dice? And it's just adding numbers together.
Slowly. It's two giant mechs standing in front of each other and slugging it out.
Yep.
Awesome.
But there is one piece of this that is amazing, and they should blow this out into all of the rules, and that's what D&D should recommend, which is the critical events. Because that's how you make mass combat really cool. When you have two armies facing off against each other in this brilliant bloody battle, it's a question of what do you do as the PC to tip the balance in your favor, right? Like, what are you doing? Are you infiltrating behind enemy lines and sapping their supplies? Are you assassinating their general? Are you, you know, making a desperate play to form an alliance with a neighboring kingdom to bail you out, right? Those are the cool things, you know? Like, are you making the Death Star trench run in the midst of this naval fight? That's awesome. But, like, the actual naval fight is just not that interesting.
Yeah, just narrated in the background.
Exactly.
Like, none of that needs to be mechanical. Like, oh, wow, that ship explodes. It's crazy. You can feel the heat coming off it.
Well, the ship exploding might be the complication that puts you into action, right? But that's the narration. That's what makes the story.
Yeah. Like, or 10 ships are exploding in the background. Whatever.
Right.
You know, mechanically speaking, it's still at character scale.
Exactly.
Which, like, it's disappointing that this critical event section, I hesitate to call it a section, it's like four small paragraphs that basically say, hey, maybe you should do this.
Yeah, but it is the best four paragraphs in probably all of Unearthed Arcana, in my opinion. Like, honestly, because mass combat is hard to handle at the table. We did a whole episode on scale, and that's something that we talked about, right? And it's something they mentioned in this article, too, is like the difference between, you know, being at 30,000 feet watching armies fight and being at 20 feet watching a character fight.
I'm glad they mentioned it. There's just no advice here.
That's true. That's true. So for me, take the critical events section of this and take it to heart, because that's a great way to handle armies clashing.
That's right. Speaking of clashing,
are we about to talk about my outfit?
Well, you're not wearing a TP t-shirt, so.
I know. It clashes with the world now.
Last week, we introduced the actual party in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, who spend the vast majority of their time clashing with everyone they meet.
Each other.
Yeah. So, Shane, where are we in that campaign?
Okay, so the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Dark Heresy Rogue Trader game, where the players are members of a crew of a Rogue Trader vessel. If you found Total Party Thrill looking for an Eberron game, that's Morning Glory. And we finished that campaign, recapping it from episode 0 to episode 73. So you can go back through the back catalog and find that. In the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, our Warhammer 40k game, we have finished the prologue, which was a group of acolytes sent by an inquisitor to investigate heresy on a small aggro world.
And they royally screwed it up.
They sure did. And now we've rolled new characters, who will become the crew of the Rogue Trader vessel, His Enduring Light. So we've met the party. That's Doc, the Explorator, and part-time Medicae. Draco and Trank, the Arch-Militants. Echo, the Voidmaster. Flair, the Astropath. And Trix, the Seneschal. And they all basically are the, you know, the command squad of the Rogue Trader, Elias Lionheart, who... he's weak-willed, to say the least.
And old.
And kind of a failure.
Yeah.
Like, at everything.
And doesn't really leave the ship or really his room ever.
Yeah, he's pretty unambitious. And, like, he's pretty sure he's about to lose his warrant of trade, so he just doesn't care anymore.
He's really kind of the ideal GM NPC if you're a player in a party.
Yeah. It's like, you guys run things, just don't screw it up too bad.
Well... Whoops.
Just make sure I always have fresh Amasek, please. So you are currently in the service of an Imperial Inquisitor named Bones.
Wait a minute. Where have we heard that name before?
Well, Bones sent the team of acolytes down to Aggroworld.
Yes, indeed he did.
And he pressed you into service to deliver them to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've been reporting back on events, and he's figured out that, wow, this was a royal screw job.
Yep. That team that you assembled. Idiots.
So what did he tell you to do?
He told this new party to kill the old party.
Which is convenient as a GM.
And also terrifying as someone who had helped create members of that party. Because remember, they were originally created as part of a one-shot. So we made them combat monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why they weren't very good at any kind of parlaying once they actually got to the surface of the planet.
Which is why they made a total mess of things, right?
Yes, exactly. So now these new characters that we have just rolled up, that we have created to be, you know, explorers and negotiators, mm-hmm. and, you know, a well-rounded party, have been tasked with killing these combat beasts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fortunately, about half of them are in the infirmary.
Yep.
And we have the element of surprise. Of course, two of them are assassins and
right, yeah.
in so, pretty good condition.
Yeah, so you've decided that you'll take out the three members of the acolytes that are in the Medicaid recovering,
mm-hmm.
figuring you'll have the element of surprise, while the remainder have finished their work and are returning up to your ship from the surface. So you'll kind of like kill their friends while they're in transit and then deal with them when they get on board, so no one ever knows that you did it.
That's exactly how it worked out.
Oh, yeah. Something yeah. like that.
Yeah.
So you ambush them in the Medicaid, catch them only partially armed, I think is fair to say.
I mean, yeah, we built characters who are also paranoid.
Yeah.
So even undergoing surgery, still were armed.
That was my favorite part was yeah. it was just like, wait, they would not have done that. And I was like, really? And like, they would have done
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they absolutely would have done that. I will say, when my character, Trank, new character, Trank, who is an assassin and head of security on the ship, once we, like, as a party found out that, oh, we're supposed to, like, kill our old party, the only thing I wanted to have happen is to have my new character kill my old character.
Uh-huh. And we'll find out if that worked. So you guys initiated the ambush and started trading wounds pretty heavily. And I mean, they were fighting back hard.
Yeah, that's what they were built for. That's all they could do.
Right, right. And I think what happened is you had killed one character, Kat, and she had been fully equipped. Seeing the situation turn against them, you know, grossly outnumbered and down one ally, your old character, Friends Job, pulled a grenade off of her body.
Yep.
And proceeded to do the exact thing that had put him in the Medicaid in the first place.
A grenade cascade.
Triggered a grenade cascade.
Yeah.
So that fried the party, and I mean, mostly himself as well. But it did set off a strange event as well, didn't it, Ishan?
Well, Trank is head of security. He's also in charge of making sure that people don't screw things up.
Mm-hmm.
So he ordered the rest of the party to go into the Medicaid bay. And they don't come out until they're dead. And if anyone leaves, I'm going to shoot them because that's what I'm good at. So if you chase them out, that's great too. I'll just shoot them.
And Dark Heresy has rules for this.
Yes.
That specifically like require you to state what triggers your Overwatch fire.
Mm-hmm.
And you said anyone.
If anyone leaves the infirmary, I will shoot them. Yes.
And then we rolled randomly for damage on the various wound tables. And one of your allies, poor Astropath in over his head, flare,
mm-hmm.
got flung back 5 meters in a random direction, which was towards the door.
Directly through the door into my line of fire. I had to pop a fate point in order to not shoot him right in the head.
Yeah, because you were going to like crit him, right? And then you had to re-roll that to fail.
I was using my sniper rifle and Trank is specced for one hit assassinations. Yes. And we were like, I guess I have to roll it. Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
Fate point, reroll. Oh, that's much better. And by that, I mean much worse.
Right. So you pulled that shot, managed to miss your friends, dealt with the exploded Medicaid. I think you guys then just kind of had mop-up duty because the survivors were pretty weak and you guys were way worse off, like multiple burn fate points.
Yeah, and we decided that, you know, the rest of the people who are heading back to the ship from the surface of the planet, let's just chalk up the shuttle as lost and just blast it out of the void.
Yeah, because on that shuttle were the two assassins.
Yeah.
Who were definitely fully equipped and likely would have brought recruits from their competing assassin temples as well.
Our party doesn't know that there are assassin temples.
Oh, I know. Right? Like, I know.
players at the table, we know.
Yeah.
Which is why I hate this planet.
You should hate the GM, not the game. All right, so having met the requirements for Inquisitor Bones, you feel like job well done. You know, one shuttle, one Medicaid down, but otherwise, you're alive, you're intact. Let's go loot the bodies.
Yeah, but they blew up.
Well, they had quarters on the ship, so you figured, let's see what they left behind.
Traps. So many traps.
And we'll find out what happens next week.
All right, so this week we are continuing our series on playing non-human characters. We were going to cover halflings, but we did have a timely request on Twitter to talk about Genasi, which actually is one of our favorite races. Shane, you're actually playing one right now.
Yeah, I didn't know it was my favorite race because I never really thought about Genasi until I had the opportunity to play one in Dark Sun, and now I really like them.
That just shows your privilege.
It's true. I am privileged to not have hair that's on fire.
So do 5th edition Genasi, do Fire Genasi have like hair on fire? Because they used to have like their hair is flames.
They can, yeah. That's like the most extreme expression of elemental. And like the most subtle is it's just like kind of a glowing red.
Awesome. All right, so what the hell are Genasi?
So they're plain-touched humans who have elemental in their bloodline. Usually it's genies.
You know, that's just not natural. That's gross.
Yeah. And they're very tied to their respective elements. So there's fire, water, earth, air. In previous editions, there were also para-elemental.
Yeah.
So it was like an ooze genasi and things like that.
Silt.
Yeah.
Ash.
There were abyssal genasi as well, which were just the corrupted versions. So like it was like cinder.
Wait, so like elemental plus like a bit of tiefling.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Jesus, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they've been muddled with quite a bit.
Yeah.
For our purposes, we'll just talk about the true elemental genasi.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
So this dates back to second edition, and like so many things that we love, comes from Planescape.
That's right. Thanks, Monty.
So they were also in third edition and fourth edition, and now, and that was in Forgotten Realms, so they were introduced there. They've also been featured in Dark Sun at different points. And then in fifth edition, they are part of the Princes of the Apocalypse campaign arc, and then they were released for everybody in the Elemental Evil Players Companion via PDF. So that's cool.
Previously, they've sort of been treated as separate races, right? Like there is an air genasi, there is a fire genasi, and they all have like different stats. In 5th edition, we've just got one genasi race and then four sub-races, one for each elemental type, which I think is much more streamlined and smooth.
Yeah, it makes it much cleaner.
Mm-hmm. So why would you want to play a genasi? Why did you pick a genasi, actually, for your character, Kid?
Truthfully, it's because we're playing in Dark Sun, and we were in the desert. And
so you wanted fire resistance.
We were getting murdered by exhaustion checks. And so I figured, I just want a character who's going to be able to survive in the desert. So I went looking for fire resistance, and it was either tiefling, which doesn't really fit in Dark Sun, or mm-hmm. genasi, which definitely fit in Dark Sun. So I did.
Nice.
But yeah, so one reason to play is just that inherent magic, right? Like they're a race that is part elemental. So they have elemental magic kind of throughout them.
Yeah, I think lots of times when people are creating their character, they're like, oh yeah, I want to be like a fire-based sorcerer, or, you know, I'm a cleric who channels the power of the storm, mm-hmm. all those kinds of things. And that works, you know, just fine for any kind of race. But as a genasi, you can start right off the bat, you know, at first level, or really from birth, as someone who is innately tied to one of these elements.
Mm-hmm. It's also really great if you want a character who only knows part of their heritage, right? Because a lot of times in the story of it, right, the elemental doesn't stick around to be a parent. So you might have a mother, but no father. You have a father who raised you, but no mother.
Yeah. Great granddad had an earth elemental fetish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not necessarily like a coupling. Sometimes it's just, you know, the magic of the planes seeps into an area and like pregnant women give birth to genasi.
Yeah, I think that's how it's supposed to be in Dark Sun, because they're mm-hmm. they're seen more as like omens and like blessed by the elementals.
Mm-hmm.
The other cool thing about genasi is that idea of similar to the half elf or the half orc is that they're split between worlds, right? So they don't really fit into human society because they are such strange versions of humans, but then they're also completely ill-equipped to go to the elemental plane of fire or the elemental plane of air, you know? But they're scarcely welcome there by true elementals either. So that leads to, you know, like exiles or characters without a native homeland, or, you know, the sort of wanderer and searcher who's just looking for a place in the world.
And is perfect for an adventurer.
Yeah, you're like murder hobo to the core.
Why are you adventuring? Look at me. My feet are made of water.
Exactly. My hair looks like it's always submerged in water. Do you see how it floats? And I mean, for me, the non-mechanical reason I like Genasi is just they're funny colored people with flamboyant personalities and the best hair. It could be flames.
Yeah.
It could be crystals if you're an Earth Genasi. It's amazing.
You can be gray.
Or red.
Or blue. Blue is cool.
Earth elementals are green.
Yeah. If you want to look weird.
But still be human.
And not necessarily want to be like touched by evil.
Right. Or, you know, half dragon.
Yeah. Genasi is the way to go.
Exactly. So we've talked a little about what they look like, but let's dig into their physiology. So they're basically humans, but they have a much longer life. They live to about 120 years. And they know primordial.
Mm-hmm. I'll say that when I run games, I always like to split up the language primordial into the four elemental languages, Orin, Aquan, Ignin, and Terran. And so, like, I would give a particular type of Genasi just that one language.
Yeah.
More work, but I find it more fun.
Sure. And then stats-wise, they all get a +2 bonus to constitution, and then they get a +1 based on which element subrace you choose, and it follows pretty much like you think it would. Air gives you dex, earth gives you strength, fire gives you intelligence, and water gives you wisdom.
I think fire intelligence, that pairing is like the only one where you're like, oh, okay, not charisma.
Yeah, I would have thought it was charisma, but whatever. It's fine.
And then you get some sort of interesting adventuring types of abilities based on your element. So an air Genasi can hold their breath indefinitely. I like that they didn't say you don't need to breathe. It's that you can hold your breath. So if you fall unconscious or you're incapacitated, you naturally begin to breathe, you know, because like you're an air Genasi, you need the air, you know, but you can will yourself not to.
Mm-hmm.
Earth Genasi ignore difficult terrain made of earth or stone.
Fire gives you dark vision.
Although it is red and black?
Yeah, it's like grayscale, but instead of white, you get red. It's like gray tinted or red tinted grayscale. And then fire resistance.
And water Genasi get acid resistance.
Because there's no resistance to water.
They can breathe underwater and they get a swim speed.
And then they also all get an inherent spell casting. So generally, it's once per long rest. So air can cast levitate. Earth can cast Pass Without Trace, which is like melding into stone, basically.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to sort of flavor that, right? Because it's a stealth bonus.
Exactly. Fire gives you the Produce Flame cantrip, which is kind of funny because it mostly gives light, which you don't need because you have dark vision. But it can be used as an attack as well. And then they also get Burning Hands as a first level spell. And then Water gives you the Shape Water cantrip. And then they can cast Create or Destroy Water as a second level spell.
Yeah, these are mostly flavor abilities, but in 5th edition, all the racial spells that you get tend to be.
Yeah, I mean, Burning Hands as a first level spell is useless. Woo-hoo. By like 5th level. So
you can burn all your papers.
Yeah, I mean, that's
when
it.
When
that's
cops come.
Right. Yeah. Let me burn down this library.
So for your Genasi, when you're deciding what exactly they look like, it totally runs the gamut. You can basically make them as crazy looking as you want.
Yeah, so you can play with color. You can also play with, you know, style, anything that kind of makes it fit into your element, right? Like they say the Earth Genasi always seems to have mud on them, even when they're, no matter how much they bathe.
Right, or it could just look like you're made of crystal.
Right.
People might think you're a crystal golem.
Exactly.
It could be that crazy. Yeah, you can definitely pick sort of an elemental appearance that makes it very, very clear that you're not human.
Right. I mean, or it can be more subtle. I think the intent, though, is that you don't pass as human.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you definitely look unique from a lineup of humans.
Although I like the idea of a Genasi who, like, wants to pass and, like, does a lot of things to sort of, you know, get around it. Like, has an iron skull cap that they always wear.
Yeah.
You know, hide the fire hair.
Or, like, just constant disguise self. And then they sometimes have these, you know, smaller kind of flavor traits. So the air genasi has like a faint breeze that seems to always surround them. Or like, I like the idea of like the model walking down the street who has somebody like walking in front of them blowing the fan in their face. So their hair is always just like perfectly tussled in the wind.
Air genasi.
That's an air genasi.
Yeah.
Fire has the faint smell of brimstone. And as we talked about earlier, water elementals, like their hair looks, or sorry, water genasi, look like their hair is submerged, so it's just kind of free floating.
That's weird.
Yeah, that one's kind of weird.
Medusa!
Yeah, that'd be quite unsettling, actually. So how about Genasi culture? Is there a Genasi culture?
Well, I'd say there's sort of like four Genasi cultures. You know, Player's Handbook say they tend toward neutral. Makes sense, because they're touched by an element that doesn't have any proclivity toward law or chaos or good or evil.
Yeah. I would say there's not really a Genasi society, though, right? Because they're not really welcome in, as far as elementals even have a society, they're not really welcome there. And they're so rare in the world that it doesn't really speak of Genasi kind of pairing up and forming groups.
Yeah, I think the closest you would get would be like if a Genasi was living in the City of Brass on the elemental plane of fire, right? It's more tolerable for mortals because it's not like quite as hot. It's not literally engulfed in flame all the time.
Right.
But like that's a society that's just, it's sort of lawful evil.
Right, you know? Yeah. And it's not really a fire Genasi society as much as it is just the society of the place they reside,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and I think that's the takeaway, is that they're going to definitely mirror wherever they're from. They're going to mirror that society's reaction to them. So an open and welcoming society is going to treat them like anybody else. Like a more closed-minded or, you know, a more evil society is going to try and exploit them or drive them out.
Yeah, and I think you can sort of divide the four into two general personality types, right? The, like, fire and air are outgoing and free-willed, and then water and earth are sort of more stoic and calm.
Yeah.
And so those, I think, will react to the society at large in very different ways. You know, like if you have a sort of caste-based society that says, you know, you do these things because this is who you are, it's much more likely that you'll have fire or air genasi from that society become adventurers or leave. Or,
yeah, they're
going to
rebel.
Right, or get in trouble and you know, end up, like, in jail.
Right.
Whereas it's much more likely that a water or an earth genasi in a society like that is going to become part of that society, like be used as like a guard or a soldier or something like that, a spellcaster.
Yeah, I mean, they actually talk about in the 5th edition entry that earth and water genasi are often solitary.
Mm-hmm.
Like they leave society and look outside of the city. They might join a smaller group that kind of more aligns with them, and that water especially tend to be like mariners and travelers because they want to be close to the sea.
Water genasi as pirate.
Yeah.
Yar.
Hey, not worried about going overboard.
That's right. Yeah, and I like the idea that like there's an earth genasi who just walks out into the wilderness. No one can find them. Pass without trace.
Right.
And they just kind of sit under a tree for 100 years, think about things.
Or, you know, into like a dwarven settlement.
Yeah, right. I'm going to hang out with the dwarves. The dwarves are like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, you're a little tall, but can you swing a hammer? So let's talk about family ties. Because family is really at the core of what the Genasi are, right? And notably their lack of family. So what does childhood look like for a Genasi?
A lot of it is going to depend on what your parents are, right? It is possible that you are born to two humans because of the place they live in is suffused with elemental energy.
Yep.
And, well, you know, if this is a more sort of like backward society, they may not know what you are. It could be that others of your kind were like killed or murdered or sacrificed, you know? So you're probably very, very rare in those types of societies.
Mm-hmm.
You might have been cast out and, you know, had to live on your own. Perhaps that is how you discovered the different kinds of abilities that you can do, right? An air genasi levitates into the trees to get fruit that no one else can.
Yeah, I doubt a fire genasi is going to be able to use burning hands multiple times in a city.
Well, it's only once a day, so.
Yeah. Day two, you're in jail.
That's right. But in much more civilized or even maybe like ritualized or religious or arcane societies, it's quite possible that you are seen as like a blessed event, you know, a gift from the planes.
Right. The other thing to think about is that a lot of genasi are just going to have the one parent,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's going to be those types of struggles in a medieval society of not having that split, right? So any type of kind of orphan story or, you know, seeking out that second parent would make a lot of sense for a genasi child as well.
I think it's also likely that a genasi ends up being raised by an organization.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're, I mean, even in a society where they're seen as a good omen, maybe they're taken away.
Yeah. I mean, also if you have churches that, you know, religious affiliations to elements, mm-hmm. That organization might want to take in a genasi as well.
Maybe a temple devoted to the elements.
Right.
Maybe specifically evil elements. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I don't know. I feel like somebody went back there at some point, that temple of evil elements.
I guess we'll never know. So maybe you didn't have a great family life, or maybe you didn't really know your family, but what if you want to make a new family? Had a genasi romance.
It's probably difficult. You know, I mean, when you're like persona non grata in a lot of societies, it's hard to find a mate.
And literally my hair is on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's also a divide between air and fire, right? And their kind of tendency towards flamboyancy and their feelings of superiority and wanting to flaunt that superiority. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult to find somebody who's on board with you versus like earth and water, who are kind of more withdrawn and would shy away from that kind of boldness of feeling.
Yeah, not many chances to meet people 100 feet underground.
Right.
Except the Svirf Neblin. Sexy, sexy Svirf Neblin.
Yeah. Great. But genasi are rare. So if two genasi meet, I mean, I feel like they're going to try and hit it off, right?
You mean of the same type?
No, I'd be curious, maybe even across types.
Really?
Yeah. Especially if you're not the diametric opposition, right? Like fire and air seems like they would get along fine, and earth and water as well.
But fire and water? I mean, hey, Paula Abdul said opposites attract.
Right,
so.
Yeah. James Taylor, you know, fire and rain. But I think there's a shared experience there, right, that would kind of make them kindred spirits regardless of the elemental differences.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would probably overpower the sort of like elemental opposition, because they're not true elementals, right? They don't actually cancel each other out. They're still humanoids.
Right. They're not like bound by their innate nature to fight until one is burnt.
Right.
So how do genasi interact with other kinds of people that they come across in their travels?
Well, being a strange race, we always have to start with how obvious are your features? You know, mm-hmm. like how rare and unique do you look?
Yeah, when you're playing a genasi or any kind of weird or strange looking character, I think it's important to really sort of define exactly how it is that you look. Because that's really helpful for a GM to know what NPCs are encountering. Because each NPC might have a particular reaction to a particular kind of thing, right? Like if your skin looks like cinders, that is going to cause reactions in people who've had you know, issues with fire mages.
Yeah. Or likewise, if you're an earth elemental and it looks like your skin is crystallizing, they might want to treat you for that.
Right.
You know, like, you might be sick. That looks bad. And then I think, you know, on the way more subtle end, if you're trying to pass as human, you're going to get basically the broader interaction that humans have wherever you are, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to be kind of looked down upon by elves. You're going to... Dwarves are kind of going to think of you as loose cannons, you know, those sorts of reactions.
Yeah. And then there also might be a bit of like an uncanny valley effect where other humans are like, I mean, yeah, you're...
Human-ish.
You're one of us.
Yeah.
But there's just something off about that kid.
Right.
What about actual real elementals? Mommy!
So, they say genies don't really care for their mortal offspring. Mm-hmm. That they either think of it as a mistake and don't care about it, or they're just unfeeling towards them. So, I don't think you're going to get that fateful reunion with your lost parent and finally find that one elemental who, you know, like, got together with your mom.
Yeah. And also, you know, like genies and djinns and things like that, like, is there an excellent possibility that you're the result of some sort of just like magic spell?
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, of course, not all Genasi come from elemental parentage either. You know, that elemental could be much further back in your bloodline, so it might be impossible to trace. But I think in general, elementals are probably going to be curious at you because you do look like them, right? But their reaction is going to be based kind of on what type of Genasi are you? Are you part fire elemental like me? Are you part air elemental like me? Or are you water and thus very dangerous to me? And right. I must put you out.
It's also quite possible that the elemental, at least, I mean, in general, elementals aren't usually thought of, like, pure elementals aren't thought of as having, like, you know, particularly high intelligence.
Right.
You know, they just sort of, like, are focused on doing one thing. It might be that the fire elemental sees the fire genasi as a kind of abomination, right? Like, you're not hot enough.
Yeah. Let me teach you how to be warmer. Come yes. here.
Together we shall burn everything.
Yeah. And I think the more intelligent elementals probably treat Genasi with curiosity because they're rare and they're strange from an elemental's point of view.
Yeah, and I think remember that in 5th edition there are a lot of creatures that are not true elementals that are elemental creatures and are tied to a particular kind of element. So like gargoyles are a type of earth elemental.
Yeah.
Or like Azur, you know, the dwarves with fire heads.
Right.
Hey, actually, fire genasi probably get along. Yeah. Hey, how do you sleep at an inn?
I bring my iron bed with me everywhere.
Right.
Obviously.
The iron pillow.
All right. So you've left your home for whatever reason. You've become an adventurer. You are... you know, wary of interactions with new people because you never really know exactly how they're going to respond to you. But what if you finally attached yourself to a real adventuring party? How do you get along with them? Certainly they think you're weird.
You know, in 5th edition, there's a sidebar that describes the personalities of each type of Genasi. And I kind of don't like it because it really focuses on some party unfriendly qualities.
Hmm.
Like it talks about, you know, the air elementals are haughty because they're proud and they think they're better than everyone, that you know, earth elementals are very reserved, and that fire elementals have quick tempers, which I get are sort of matching the elementals behind them, but also like you don't want to become this like overbearing, like invalidating other players' choice, right? Because like, oh, I have a quick temper, so when they insult us during that negotiation, I try and cut his head off. That's like, all right, but we were trying to have a negotiation here, you know? Like, we're not going to bring you around if you're going to be a powder keg.
Because you'll ignite it, because your hair is made of fire.
Kaboom, yeah.
Dude. Yeah, I think we talked about character growth before. Like, maybe this is something that happens at, like, levels 1 or 2, you know?
But the level's most likely to get you killed? Great.
I mean, that's when the barbarian is probably going to run into combat, and the paladin is going to smite anyone that pings his evil.
True.
So... after that, you know, have a character that, like, learns.
Yeah, you know, I mean, modulates a little bit, you know.
Also, remember that the like racial personalities are massive stereotypes in the book, right? So it's quite possible that your genasi plays against type, or, you know, adjacent to type. It doesn't act like this, but knows that, you know, the majority of my people, like fire genasi, like we're pretty brash tempered, you know, like I don't want to be that. I don't want to do that. But yeah, I understand how like sometimes it's difficult to deal with.
Or even if you're playing in type, make sure that you're playing it in a party friendly way. So like that bad temper, right? It's like, I get angry, I'm about to scream, I walk out of the room. Instead of, I'm getting angry, I'm about to scream, I pull my sword.
Right.
You know, it's like highlight how you're focusing on fighting against that stereotype, right?
Yeah. Or maybe you're the one who's always advocating, no, we should attack. That's what we should do. But you don't do it on your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, my vote is attack, duh.
Right. What do you want to do? Attack? Okay, cool. Within the party, canny PCs can also kind of take advantage of the strangeness of their ally, right? Like, mm-hmm. their appearance might be unsettling to somebody who's not familiar with genasi, or it might elevate their standing in certain circles. You know, we talked about temples that are dedicated to elementals. but even more benevolent temples as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people who aren't necessarily familiar with genasi don't necessarily know their abilities,
right?
You know, and if you look human-ish, you can, there's a lot of things that you can do. Like, a water genasi can pretend to have drowned.
Yep.
Look what you did to our companion.
Yeah.
I cannot believe this. Certainly we are due recompense.
Yeah, that's particularly handy for the air elemental, right? You just stop your breathing.
Or levitate, you know, start deepen your voice a little bit and convince them that you are a god.
In some settings where genasi are viewed positively, you know, like Dark Sun, it might be a boon to the group just to have a genasi nearby, right? Mm-hmm. They might get favorable reactions in general to anything that they do because they're acting under the purview of a genasi. Keep in mind too that if you are an exile, or you've got that kind of stuck between two worlds, kind of half elf, half orc thing, right? The group that takes you in and accepts you is going to be the one you're most loyal to, right? That might actually replace your own family connection, mm-hmm. because they genuinely like you. And that doesn't happen a whole lot for people whose heads are on fire or whose skin looks like metal.
Unless, of course, you meet some of those other weird races out there that might have similarities to you.
Yeah.
Maybe the Fire Genasi get along really well with the Azur. Air Elementals might get along really well with other creatures that naturally fly.
Yeah, like Aarakocra or...
Winged Tieflings.
Winged Tieflings, yeah.
Paterans.
Paterans, yeah.
Or it could just be professions, right? Sailors love water genasi. Why? Because you can clean the barnacles off the hull.
Right, exactly. You know, a group of elves or dwarves would probably be pretty partial to an earth genasi who probably shares similar objectives, right? Leave us alone and keep the earth safe.
Yeah, it's great to have, you know, an earth genasi take up home near the base of your tree house.
Yeah. A firm foundation.
That's right. It doesn't bother us. We don't bother it. Keeps the humans away.
Right. So what are some reasons for adventuring? What sets you on that path in the first place?
Well, like we said, you might not have any other option. You could have been kicked out and you might be homeless. Weirdo.
Yeah, if you have a lousy childhood and you're tough enough to survive it in an uncaring fantasy world, then you're probably tough enough to survive adventuring too.
You're also capable of doing things that other people aren't, which makes you a boon to a party.
Yeah, I mean, you already mentioned the old, oh no, you drowned our friend deception. But that's also just, you know, useful if you are worried about, you know, maybe a sunken temple that you're trying to raid for gold. Certain areas require you to be able to swim and get underwater. It's certainly an advantage to have a native swimmer doing that.
Yeah. If I detect a trap and I smell a bit of sulfur...
Yeah.
Or maybe bat guano.
Right.
Like, I'm asking the fire genasi to go check it out.
Exactly. I think it's also fair to have a genasi who's seeking the truth about their elemental heritage, trying to figure out what that is and understand it and understand what they are. Because it's unlikely they're going to be able to find anybody who really knows.
Yeah, but in a, you know, a traditional sort of D&D fantasy setting, when each of these elements has certain proclivities or even mysteries about it, it's certainly something that can become an object of, well, I mean, maybe worship, right? But probably more just, you know, interest or fascination
right.
for someone who sort of has it running literally through their blood.
Like reverence, almost.
Yeah.
It could also be a source of revenge, right? Like, that genie certainly left your father out. Like, left him with a kid to raise and didn't bother showing up to help, so never sent me a birthday card.
Look at everything I've had to deal with. Look what you did to me.
Exactly, yeah. The highly solipsistic Genasi is going to be quite dangerous.
Yeah, probably air.
Yeah.
You know, air Genasi. All right, so in 5e, with +2 con, that's good for pretty much any class. But at the same time, it's not the primary stat for any particular class. The only thing I really think of is like barbarian, which is sort of odd. Like all Genasi are like pretty good barbarians.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fair. You know, you've been picked on and prodded a lot. Mm-hmm. You could have some anger deep inside.
That's true. A levitating barbarian? Oof.
Yeah. I like the flaming bear totem.
Yeah. Right. I set my hide armor on fire.
Exactly. So constitution is also super helpful for casters. First of all, because they have generally lower hit points, but then also because they're making concentration checks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to give them a better con save. So that's handy as well. But then, you know, each elemental type gets a +1 in a different stat. So their effectiveness mostly ties to that secondary stat. So, you know, Air Genasi get a bonus to dex. So any dex heavy class like monk or rogue is going to be a natural fit.
Earth gets +1 to strength, so barbarian, fighter, paladin, any of those melee classes are great.
Yeah, I especially like it with Vengeance Paladin because it's really dependent on extra damage from Hunter's Mark, which requires concentration. So the con bonus is doubly effective if you're maintaining concentration. Because it's intelligence-based, the Fire Genasi is great for wizards and also Eldritch Knights.
Less helpful for arcane tricksters because your head gives off light.
Yeah. It's hard to stay hidden.
Iron skull cap.
Right. And then the water genasi with wisdom bonus is great for the cleric and monk. And the caster druid, it's less useful for the moon druid because it diminishes the value of your utility shapes.
Although I will say, if you are a genasi who hates that you are what you are, turning into a normal animal might be very appealing.
Yeah, that's actually kind of funny to think about, that a druid changing shapes would probably be less rare and off-putting to people than a genasi.
Yeah.
So in your beast shape, you're actually better understood and liked.
Yeah. That's a cat.
Right.
Not a cat on fire.
Exactly.
So in combat, Genasi are quite capable, especially at taking damage. That +2 con makes them very sturdy.
They've got a couple trick abilities, right? Each different subrace has something that's useful in combat. They don't always scale super well, but what I like, because of the bonus to constitution, is that you can kind of jump into the middle of things. So even casters can use some of their more aggressive close range spells without necessarily worrying as much about getting, you know, one-shotted.
Right. It works nicely for Gish characters.
Yeah. Bladesinger is a great combo there.
Unfortunately, there aren't any con-based skills. So the skills you're good at are going to be based on the class you pick. And then, you know, you'll get a small bonus from your secondary stat bump.
And then we also always talk about magic items that are related to the various races. And like so many of the rare races, there's not really Genasi-focused magic items. But there are some elemental-focused ones that I think are interesting to think about. So you've got the bowl, the brazier, the sensor, and the stone of elemental control. Those relate to each of the four elements. There's also the ring of Ginny summoning and the ring of elemental command, both of which would be kind of handy if you're seeking out elementals as a genasi.
Yeah, maybe what you really want to do is control them.
I like that.
Yeah. None of them are particularly tied to genasi, but it's an easy conversation to have with your GM. Or if you are a GM and you have a genasi player, it's pretty easy to say, no, that ring of elemental command works on you.
Oh, that's not fun. Then again, it is a legendary item, so.
Or maybe it can work on you, yeah. Right? Like, you can break free of it because, like, you're just half.
Right. And then the other thing I like to think about as a genasi who might be looking for information about elementals is you could become a collector of these types of magic items, right? Like, in seeking to understand, you're also accumulating these trinkets that help you. And then I also like the elemental gem, which is basically like a single shot use of conjure elemental, because there's, you know, an elemental trapped inside this gem and you break it to free the elemental. But I like the idea of the bitter genasi trying to find their elemental parent and then trap them in a Pokeball. So you want to craft the elemental gem and then trap them inside.
Yeah. In Eberron, I could see a genasi trying desperately to learn the skills of elemental binding.
Oh, yeah.
Putting them inside kyber shards. However, it's only the gnomes who know how to do that, and they jealously guard that secret. So that's an interesting plot hook, trying to wrestle those secrets away from the trust in Zalargo.
Yeah, you'll have to, like... I totally see how this works. You kidnap one of the Zalargo gnomes. You interrogate him extensively for this information, and then you try and take down the whole organization. It's like a whole campaign.
Yeah, that'll definitely work.
Yeah.
You won't be killed before you even enter Zalargo.
No, it'll be fine. You definitely won't be trapped in a kyber shard yourself.
Yeah, no, not at all. Am I elemental enough? Yep.
So we've talked a little bit about my Dark Sun character, Kid, who's a fire genasi and is a fine omen for the mercenary company that we're a part of, and sort of that's his main role. That's why he's welcome, is because he is a genasi.
But so bright.
Quite bright. He's the smartest one in the party.
Yeah, and too bright.
Have you ever played a genasi?
I actually haven't. I've never had a genasi character. Although I've always considered it, because I like the idea of it. I like the sort of like strange looking people with weird heritages. You know, planes touched characters in general. I really like Asimar. Tieflings are great. But I've just never gotten around to playing a genasi. And I think it's because in 3.5, I think they had a level adjustment.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah. So sort of a pain to be able to play them.
Yeah. But they're like just straight up meant I wasn't ever going to play that race.
Yeah, basically.
Do you hear that, Ishan?
That is definitely not the sound of the trust sneaking up on us, because they don't make any sound. So before they get here, maybe we should move on to the character creation forge.
Well, before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
Well, we do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sends Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us if you can't fit it into 140 characters at totalpartythrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.totalpartythrillcast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge,
say it,
we are building the Fistadin.
Ah, yes. The Fistadin. A common trope of... No one ever does this.
It's a paladin who punches things.
That's right. In the vein of the Smite Biter, we bring you the Fistadin.
Great.
Okay, it is really hard in 5th edition to combine Monk and Paladin.
As it should be.
You've got all of these incompatible abilities, right? Like, Monks can't wear armor at all, but Paladin gives you all the armor and the shields and doesn't do anything with dexterity, which is why you need that armor and shield. And the Monk is all dex, and their stats are all garbage. Dex, wisdom, strength, charisma, and note, they are the only two classes where you need more than one stat at 13 in order to multi-class into it. Such a freaking pain.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Also, they have redundant abilities. Like, they both get extra attack, and they both get immunity to disease. It's just like, oh, well, this is great. At this level, I get something I already have.
Right.
So it's complicated.
All right. So where do we land?
The build is Open Hand Monk 8, Devotion Paladin 12.
All right, and you mentioned the multi-classing requirement, so I'm guessing we're going to focus on Monk and go Dex Wiz, so we're going to start Paladin and avoid needing Strength or Charisma.
Well, we're probably going to want the Charisma, a little bit of Charisma anyway. You've got that saving throw bonus that is going to be nice for you, but basically, if you start as Paladin, then you can definitely avoid the Strength requirement. Maybe you have a 13 charisma, maybe you don't. Whatevs.
Okay.
But then after that, yeah, you can get right into Monk with Dex Wisdom, both of which you're going to need because you can't wear that armor.
Right.
And have any usefulness as a monk.
You can't use that shield.
Yeah. So you're really going to need that wisdom, plus all of your monk abilities key off of that wisdom. So you get the traditional monk goodies, slow fall, step of the wind, all that kind of stuff. But the main thing that you really, really want is flurry of blows. And then also martial arts, you know, if you run into key points or you don't want to spend key, as a bonus action, you just make an extra attack.
Yep.
So you're making a bunch of attacks.
Yep.
What can you do when you make those attacks?
I hear paladins have this smite ability.
Huh. That's interesting. The thing that usually holds a paladin back in terms of like their damage output is they attack twice, and so they can smite twice.
Mm-hmm.
But when you attack four times...
You can smite four times.
That's right.
I mean, at least until you run out of spell slots.
Yeah, which is going to be fast.
Yeah. We made a glassier cannon.
Right. Lower AC.
Yeah.
But man, so much output. We're going open hand, which means that you've got that opportunity to force a dex saving throw or else they drop prone. So in your first attack, you're going to want to hopefully knock them prone, and then all your other attacks get advantage.
And I think you can trigger your open hand and a smite on the same attack anyway.
Yep.
So nothing holding you back.
That's right. Open hand, smite, hopefully drop them. All the others then come with advantage, which means you're obviously more likely to hit, but then more likely to crit as well.
And anytime you crit, you want to smite.
Oh, absolutely. So if you really needed to, you could, you know, hit four times, smite four times with an excellent chance of getting a crit in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So you'll also end up being immune to disease twice. Or of protection.
Actually, just once. Oh, okay. We didn't double up on it.
Okay. you'll get Aura of Protection, which will boost saving throws for your allies and yourself. And then you are immune to charm and frighten effects.
As are your allies within 10 feet of you. So you're actually much more party friendly than a traditional monk is. And at level 11, as a paladin, you'll get an extra d8 on every attack, which is better than going more monk to get higher fist damage. You do a d6 with your fist. A few more levels of monk, you could get to d8. But I'd rather have a full extra die. DA.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, normally you go like Vengeance Paladin when you want to do a bunch of damage on every attack because you get Hunter's Mark. But we've already got the Divine Favor spell, which is going to add a D4 to every attack. It's only concentration a minute, but you don't need to switch targets, which is nice. And that way we get all the devotion goodies like the Charm Immunity.
All right. So you're a punching paladin. How did you get here, Ishan?
I think my Fistedin started off, you know, training as a paladin, you know, actually in like a court, but quickly realized that they weren't cut out for the traditional gallant knight type of combat, right?
Okay.
They're not strong. They're dexterous. They find that the heavy armor actually prevents their movements. So more often than not, they're finding themselves shedding the armor or like reluctantly getting into it just for like a tournament or something like that. And I think they find that this bare knuckle combat, which is usually looked down upon as sort of like, you know, ruffians and fisticuffs,
mm-hmm.
is much more to their liking.
Okay.
they're already a paladin, right? They're devoted to a higher ideal. And that, I think, very easily leads them to discover that there is also like power within them. So I don't see them as at odds. I see this character as someone who sort of takes both, right? Like higher power and power from within, and then merging them together. The honor comes from bearing yourself, right? Stripping down the armor. I don't need the protection of metal. I don't need steel in my hand. In fact, I will take down evil with the strength of my own arm.
Oh, okay. All right, I buy that.
What about your fisted din?
So I'm still a little inspired by last week's arena battles episode. So my fisted din is a gladiator by background who is a paladin of Kord.
Oh, I like it.
So Kord being the god of, well, gladiators, warriors, wrestlers, those types of things. As a gladiator, it's, of course, it's always useful to be able to use your hands. So rather than relying on whatever random weapons are thrown into the pits, you can always have something dangerous. And so, you know, you begin down that path, but as you devote yourself to Kord, you're kind of receiving that divine spark. So when you eventually leave the gladiatorial path, which would happen, you know, say about level one, you've got a little bit of that, like, kind of protect the weak, right? Like if gladiators are a noble profession who entertain the masses, they also have a responsibility to protect those that aren't ready for the pits. And so you help your allies around you by becoming a paladin of devotion, because it's a noble craft. It's a trade. It's not just a blood sport to a follower of Kord.
Plus also Kord loves it when like sweaty people wrestle each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the best way to give your aura to somebody, I think.
Stay close. No, closer.
All right. If you want to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you're willing to help us out, we'll read your 5-star review on the air.
You can also find us on Stitcher. It's like a Pandora for podcasts. If you like or favorite us there, the algorithm will help other people find us.
And what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about the Goldilocks levels, that sweet spot, those middle levels when characters are powerful but not game-breaking.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We are building Conan.
The Barbarian?
The Adventurer?
The Destroyer?
Yeah, all of the above.
Okay. Well, that's it for episode 84 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we've lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening. Yeah.